Welcome, everyone, to a Fightin' Friday on Couch Potato Diary. My name is Peter Klein. Thank you very much for tuning in today. Coming up, we are going to talk some UFC, some boxing, and some WWE after a big weekend last weekend. What's next for all the competitors? Plus, we'll get into a few things from the week. So, a lot to cover. If you're looking for the more stick-and-ball type sports, we have those on the episode that came out this morning. So, for NHL and NBA, just go there. All right, that's enough talking. Let's get into the fighting. Let's talk some UFC coming out of UFC 301. So, UFC 301 is now in the books, and the champion stays the champ as Pantoja gets the victory in a unanimous decision win over Steve Ersig. And a lot of talk about Ersig in the final moments looking for a takedown when maybe he shouldn't have. And this is one of the reasons why I always bring up people's resumes and looking at, like, okay, who has this guy fought before and what types of situations has he been in? Because that is something that could work against a number of fighters. Going up against the champion in your weight class in the fifth round, that's not the time for that. And so this is a learning experience for Ersig. And it's tough when it comes in a championship bout, because you should be learned by then. But this is a huge learning and growing experience for Ersig, who I thought really showed himself really, really well. But this is one of those things I talk about in other sports all the time, and it comes up here. This is where you have to learn how to win. This is where you have to learn what it takes to win in those big moments. And Ersig just didn't have it here. Great fight. Very good fighter. Just didn't have it on this night. So what is next? Well, for Pantoja, I think his next title is against Amir Albaz. Albaz has won 6 in a row, 5 in the Ultimate Fighting Championship. He is coming off of a win over Kai Kara France. The first two in the rankings, Brandon Royval, we've seen it. Brandon Moreno, we've seen it. This division does not need more rematches right now. We need new contenders coming in and getting these opportunities. And so I think Albaz is someone who deserves this opportunity, has a real win over Kai Kara France. And so I think that is where the Ultimate Fighting Championship goes next with Pantoja. As far as Ersig is concerned, I have him going up against Matheus Nicolau, both coming off of losses like a week apart. And both of them, I still think, fairly high in the UFC's rankings in the flyweight division. And so I do think that these are a couple of fighters who deserve an opportunity for a bounce back. For Nicolau, it's a couple of losses in a row. He needs one bad. And I think this would be a good get-right spot for Ersig. After that, Jose Aldo with a turning-back-the-clock performance. And some people saying he should get a title shot. I am not one of those people. I like to give title shots off of things like merit. And while Jose Aldo, we did a legacy look, that resume, anytime they want to throw him into a title shot, they can be like, yeah, well, it's Jose Aldo, so deal with it. That they would be very much within their rights to do that. But I think in this case, he goes up against the incredibly named Song Yadong. They are right beside each other in the rankings. And I think this would be a really fun, really interesting matchup. And if Aldo wins this one, then we can talk about hot shot and a title opportunity. But I still think he needs one more win. In terms of Jonathan Martinez, I have him going up against Pedro Munhoz, both coming off of losses, both in the bottom part of the top 15 in the bantamweight division. And so both, I think, needing wins to kind of get back into the kind of a win away from being two wins away sort of a thing, but both those guys really need to bounce back. And so I think that would be a good move to make. For Anthony Smith, some talk that maybe he works his way back up the ladder and becomes a title challenger one more time. I have him going up against the loser of Johnny Walker and Volkan Ozdemir, those two fighting in June. So just next month. So the timeline, not perfect, but they line up a little bit. The winner of this fight, I think, is going to want something a bit more impactful than someone behind them in the rankings. But I think for Anthony Smith, it makes sense. Like, he is working his way up. The loser of this will be kind of on their way down. And they're right there. And for Smith, it would kind of solidify, like, is this guy someone who can make one more run at being a title challenger? Or is this just someone who has been on our desk, who obviously knows a lot about fighting, but maybe doesn't necessarily have it anymore? And I think it would be a good landing spot for the loser of Ozdemir against Walker. Michel Pereira, I have him going up against Chao Barallo. Both guys fought at 301. both guys picking up victories. They're right beside each other in the rankings. Let's do it. They're on the same timeline. Let's roll with it. Pereira, again, so impressive coming off of that victory at UFC 301 and the maturity that he has shown after some questions about it in his first few fights, I think was really, really impressive for him. And the last one, my boy, Dracar Close, he comes up with a unanimous decision win. I have him against Beneil Dariush again. This was Close's last fight. He has won 4 in a row since that loss. So let's roll that baby back. Let's do it again. Dariush, I think, is in need of... I'm not going to say just in need of a win is a bit of an overstatement, but he's in need of a win. And he is someone who I think is a good, still a good barometer of can you get yourself back into title contention? The fact that Close, after 4 wins in a row, coming off of the Dariush loss, isn't higher up than where he is, I find a little mystifying, quite frankly. So I think that this is an opportunity to see, like, has he learned from that experience losing to Beneil Dariush? But it's a good time for fight fans as we get ready for UFC 302. Obviously, there's a lot of complications around the UFC's new involvement with Saudi Arabia and all of the human rights issues that go along with Saudi Arabia. From a fight standpoint, Robert Whittaker against Khamzat Chimaev is fucking bananas. And so again, it's apparently coming up in hockey, but it's come up in boxing, and it will again this week with Usyk against Tyson Fury, and maybe later this year or early 2025 with a potential Canelo against Terrence Crawford. We'll get to that in a second. But this is the start of what is going to be, I think, a complicated relationship for some fight fans. For others, yeehaw, who cares? Let's just see the best in the world punch each other in the head. And if that's your thinking, then boy, howdy, do we have a matchup for you in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia. But obviously a lot of complicated factors go along with that. So those are the fights to kind of look forward to and the fights to make coming out of UFC 301. There is a fight night card this weekend. Derek Lewis, they're on the road. So let's celebrate it. Derek Lewis, he is the king of the fight nights on the road as they, I believe, make their way to St. Louis this weekend. All right, that is the aftermath following a big UFC, big-ish UFC. What about the boxing world? Canelo Alvarez had a big fight this weekend against Jaime Munguia. What's next for both? Let's talk about it. So, Canelo Alvarez with a unanimous decision win over Jaime Munguia. We have broken that fight down at length here around these parts. I still think when you look at pound-for-pound rankings, you have to go Inoue 1 after a really solid win on Monday morning that I still can't find here in Canada, which is endlessly frustrating. I do have Terrence Crawford 2 after a win over Errol Spence Jr., and I do have Usyk 3, what he was able to do in heavyweight moving up from cruiserweight, and then I have Canelo at 4, but a very, very strong top 4. For Canelo, look, the Terrence Crawford fight is so much fun. However, I think you have to go David Benavidez next. Benavidez is the obvious title challenger for the undisputed crown in the super middleweight division at 168 pounds and has been for a while now. And for whatever reason, Canelo's team, I always say Canelo, it is Canelo's team, and I don't know who has the biggest say in what. I would venture to guess that Canelo Alvarez hasn't been afraid of a fight in his life. He would fight an oncoming Mazda if he wanted to. So I don't think that it is specifically him. I think a lot of it is his team around this, but I do also think if he went, hey, fuck faces, let me fight this guy, I think that he would then fight that guy. So when I say Canelo, I do mean Team Canelo, but there has been a hesitation from Team Canelo to want to throw him into the ring against David Benavidez for whatever reason. And I think you saw a little bit of it on Saturday night at T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas, Nevada, because that was not as overwhelming a crowd for Canelo Alvarez as Canelo Alvarez is used to. And there is this sense that Benavidez is the next one in Mexican boxing. So what would that reaction be for Canelo, who is still viewed in very high regards out in certainly Guadalajara? I don't think that will ever change, but everywhere in Mexico. When we were down in Puerto Vallarta a couple months ago, that was a couple months ago, but obviously you can get everything bootlegged down there and everything is cheap, except except for Canelo stuff. You can't get one bootlegged Canelo anything. You got to pay more than full price. A Canelo hat was $120 American dollars. You get it online for 40, but so that they still view him in the highest regards. And maybe there is a concern for damaging that reputation, but I think David Benavidez has to be the one next. And then if you want to do, like, if you want to do Canelo against Benavidez in September, and then you want to do Canelo against Terrence Crawford, Cinco de Mayo weekend, or whenever Saudi Arabia wants them to do it, then go for it that way. But I still think you need to take care of the David Benavidez part. That Crawford fight will be there even if he loses, quite frankly. And maybe he'll want a bit of a softer landing coming off of a loss. But that fight will be there. And so I think you have to take care of this one first. If you want to be the guy who is unifying titles and then defending them, this is the one you have to defend. And out of this one, Jaime Munguia taking on Caleb Plant. Plant may not want to. He has losses in two of his last three. Now the losses are to the two guys we just talked about in Canelo and David Benavidez. So again, maybe he wants a bit of a softer landing spot, but Plant is a top three fighter at 168. And Munguia, like I said earlier this week, when he said he thought he could beat anyone not named Canelo with the performance that he put on, I tend to agree with him. And so I think that there needs to be another real challenge for him and just kind of keep him in the limelight. I think you could headline at least a free DAZN card with this type of a fight and continue to build up the name of Jaime Munguia. Just quickly, before we get to the wrestling talk, there is a good fight this weekend as George Kambosos Jr. takes on Vasily Lomachenko. Lomachenko is 36 years old. It's crazy how time flies. But I still, like, obviously, if we get peak Lomachenko, he beats everybody. I still think there is a lot there in Lomachenko, so I am going with the former pound-for-pound king in the boxing world, Vasily Lomachenko, to pick up a victory and win the vacated IBF championship. So, that is the old face punch and stuff. What about some wrestling? WWE Backlash was this weekend, so let's look ahead. Previously, we looked all the way ahead to WrestleMania 41. Now we know it's in Las Vegas, Nevada. But what about SummerSlam in Cleveland? You don't even have to worry about it. I've booked it. Here is my prediction, or thoughts anyway, for how WWE gets us to the biggest party of the summer, SummerSlam in Cleveland. The WWE just wrapped up Backlash with one of the greatest crowds in the history of the company. So what's next? Well, in the immediate, it is the King and Queen of the Ring, again, talking about uncomfortable conversations, in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia. That is coming up in a couple of weeks' time. But beyond that, we have a lot going on. It is SummerSlam, it is Money in the Bank in Toronto, and then it is SummerSlam in Cleveland, Ohio. And so I thought, instead of going all the way out to WrestleMania, let's book this thing down just to SummerSlam. Let's see how we get to the midpoint of the year in the WWE. I went with 9 matches because that's how many they had last year. And let me tell you, it was tough getting everyone on this show. And you remember last year, they couldn't get Trish Stratus against Becky Lynch on the show. Or didn't, I guess. They probably could have. It's their show. But there are definitely a few that get left off here that I did not enjoy leaving off. So we will begin with the WWE Women's Championship, Bayley against Tiffany Stratton. I think that feud has legs. And I think, honestly, Tiffy time at SummerSlam. You get a few months out of Bayley, but I think you get a big moment here for Tiffany Stratton. Assuming she continues to develop, she deserves to be in this world title picture, and I think she gets the win. So I would continue to book Tiffy time all the way up to SummerSlam. Next, I would go the Gorillas of Destiny and Solo against the Pride. So Bobby Lashley and the Street Profits. I think the Street Profits are a great team to make the Gorillas of Destiny look really good. And I think Solo Sikoa taking out a big monster like Bobby Lashley is a really good way to continue to build up this faction as we get ready for a bit more faction warfare later to come in the year. The women's tag team titles, I'm going back with what didn't work in Lyon, but I'm hoping that it gets better with Bianca and Jade against the Kabuki Warriors. Now, we don't know how long Asuka is going to be out. If there has to be a Dakota Kai thrown in there with Kairi Sane, then fine. But I think these are still, even with some of the issues, these are still the two best teams in the WWE's women's tag team division right now. The one caveat on that being, if we do get the Wyatt Six at some point, Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross, I think, certainly need to be in there. I didn't put all of them in there just because we don't know them yet. And so I think there are a lot of very educated guesses, but it's still assuming. And so I think that can be a bit of a dangerous game for sure. Liv Morgan against Io Sky for the Women's World Championship. Io winning it at SummerSlam last year, cashing in Money in the Bank. I think Liv Morgan does come away with the title win over Becky Lynch. And I think these two have an unbelievable match. But if you guys have watched the show for any length of time, most of my fantasy booking eventually leads to, oh, and Io Sky wins the championship, because I think she is that talented of a performer. The United States title on the line. Logan Paul, he's got to be in Cleveland, going up against Andrade. I think these two have an unbelievable match and just completely blow things away. So I think there's a lot of fun there. I got the big meaty men smack and meet with Gunther taking on Braun Strowman. I would imagine Gunther wins the King of the Ring here, and we start to really progress him in his title aspirations. They could even do it at this point, and I wouldn't necessarily be stunned, or even before. But I think for right now, what we know, I would go with him over Braun Strowman and continue to build up that monster character that way. Drew McIntyre against CM Punk in some kind of holy shit, they're beating the hell out of each other type of a match. That just feels like the way to go. They will probably do a thing at Clash in the Castle in Scotland, and then this will be the, like, official end of the blood feud, assuming both guys can stay healthy out of whatever match they do out in Scotland. For the World Heavyweight Championship, it is Damian Priest against Finn Balor as the Judgment Day comes crumbling down around Damian Priest, who I believe gets a win here and comes away looking like, continuing to look like a really big megastar, officially finishing up his babyface turn, setting him up for something with Gunther on down the line. And then in the main event, Cody against Roman Reigns rematch. That's all. That's it. That's all I would do. We'll see. I went back and forth on whether I thought it would be Cody against Roman or Cody against Rock. I think eventually we get both. I don't know how we get there, quite honestly, because I do think at WrestleMania 41 in Las Vegas, it will be The Rock against Roman Reigns. So again, I don't know how you get both Cody rematches in this year. Maybe it is, or matchups in, sorry, in this year. Maybe you just go Cody against Rock here. Rock moves on from it, and then you go Rock against Roman, or fucking Rock wins the title here. Who knows? I think there's a lot of ways you can go with this, but Cody is definitely in the main event, and he will continue to hold that title, I think, for a very long time. Just a couple other quick wrestling notes. Anarchy in the Arena is going to be incredible as you see that the teams come together, and I have found myself pretty intrigued in this storyline with the Young Bucks kind of taking over a little bit. I thought we needed to get a touch more of them this week, continuing to put their stamp on this show, making it a little bit more insufferable. It is tough to escalate from hitting a guy with diverticulitis in the stomach with a chair, but I thought we could have used a little bit more power-hungry Young Bucks this week instead of just they have their video whatever. But I think over the next little bit, we see them become more and more insufferable, and I wonder if this is... it's funny, so much of my ideas come back to blood and guts, but I wonder if you get eventually a blood and guts for control of the company or something along those lines at a certain event, or even a Dynamite, who's to say. But I thought AEW this week was pretty strong. The Embassy turning on Swerve is interesting. No Prince Nana there is interesting. Nana is such a fun part of the presentation with the Swerve When I Drive dance and stuff like that. I would hate to see them broke up. But After a bit of an initial blip, I think they've done a pretty good job of building Swerve Strickland up. And it was awesome to see Mo Jabari wrestling on Dynamite, getting in there and kind of mixing it up with Chris Jericho and Big Bill a little bit. So that was really cool to see. But I thought, aside from that, that was the coolest thing in wrestling this week. Aside from that, I thought the coolest thing in wrestling this week, honestly, NXT doing their combine to figure out who the six competitors are for the North America, the Women's North American Championship ladder match, I thought was brilliant. And when I heard it, I kind of groaned, but they have started it out really, really well. And I, like, it's something only they could do. I don't think this is a main roster thing you could do or anything like that. Maybe you could do some kind of NBC tie-in with the Olympics thing, like some kind of triathlon, whatever the hell, for a title shot. But they did that with the Viking Raiders, Warriors, whatever, and the Street Profits during the pandemic, and it sucked. Now, different creative team. But I thought this was, I kind of groaned when I heard it. And then to see it in execution, I thought it was so unique and so brilliant and such a great use of something they do there anyway. And it's a real good way of putting over a lot of your talent at once instead of just, here's a match, here's a match, here's a match, here's a match. You can kind of tie it in with, look, this person is athletic as heck, and that is why they deserve to be in this match. And then you can kind of pivot off of this where you have someone who goes out there and can, like, broad jump a car, and, okay, well, why aren't you being a little bit better? Where is all this potential going? And so I think there are storylines you can kind of build off of with this. I thought it was so creative and so well done. So bravo to NXT for putting that together this week. All right, that is the show. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. Again, if you're wanting some of the hockey talk or some of the basketball talk, that is over on Couch Potato Diary right now, right where you're getting this. It is there, and we break it all up into all the different segments so you can just catch what you are looking for. You can find me on social media, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. I am at Primetime Klein, twitch.tv/PrimetimePK, and you can email this show, couchpotatodiary@yahoo.com. If you are listening to this, make sure you subscribe, leave a review. If you are watching, make sure you subscribe, like, and leave a comment, and I will talk to all of you next week. I'm out.
If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it, Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.